I'm Fathery.
This is Dave.
I'm Miss Taylor.
And this is Text Trek.
Engage.
Welcome back aboard the Starship Texas for the 353rd installment of the Text Trek podcast, the home of Star Trek fandom from deep in the heart of Texas, where we take a deep look at Star Trek, old and new. And tonight we are discussing Star Trek Con, Episode 7, I Am Marla, written by Kirsten Beyer and David Mack, story by Nicholas Meyer, directed by Fred Greenhalgh. And before we dive into this episode of Con that we're going to talk about, just a bit of quick housekeeping per usual. I need to give a big thank you and shout out to the wonderful, delightful, amazing people in the Text Trek Patreon who keep our weekly show going. So thank you so very much. Starfleet Sohel, Cake is Eternal, Crazy Dutchie, Joanne Robertson, John Daw, Geek Filter, Quarkspar, Matthew Averett, Braxton, Chuck A., Joel Vallis, Arthur Lamoureux, our associate producer Chris Garris, Dave Farabee, Dave A. Gregory, Joe Saporito, Wanda Valentine, Rin, and our anonymous supporters. We do like to celebrate with our patrons having monthly watch parties. We just did one this last weekend for October, watching the Discovery episode, The Sound of Thunder, and we'll have another one planned soon for November. So I think we're going to do that on Saturday, November 15th. More details to come soon, but those watch parties are open to any and all patrons. You can come in as little as $2 a month to attend those, and if you can afford to be more generous, there are some additional perks as well, so please check out the Text Trek Patreon if you are interested in supporting our show. And just a little bit of news. Dave, did you have any thoughts on the I don't know if you watched any of the stuff from New York Comic Con, but there was that Strange New Worlds clip in that trailer for the Academy show.
I watched the trailer for the Academy show. I'm blanking on it now that you caught me off guard with it. I think this is the one that started with the crazed, or like early on had who's the bad guy?
Paul Giamatti, yeah.
Paul Giamatti with like a crazy collar on and like a chain collar. He's taking the kids and stuff. That was some pretty wild stuff. I liked it. It was, you know, like Discovery and some of their other entries lately, it felt a little bit Kelvin-verse-y as far as its action. To me, I want one of those things where we see a little bit of a dialogue exchange. I want a little bit of a snippet of a whole scene, I think, on that. But I liked the trailer for it, though.
Yeah, it looks good. Looks like they're putting like a lot of like effort and budget into. I mean, that doesn't always translate to like a good final product, but
yeah, it's funny. Like, budget is almost always my last concern. You know, the thing about how good modern Trek looks is fairly low on my priority list. You know, honestly, the audio play of Khan has been reminding me that I'm just like, it's the writing stupid. That's what I'm there for. And I wouldn't mind if this was cheaper and less flashy in its filming. I don't know if I saw the Strange New World.
It was some ship spinning action.
Right? Yeah.
I think that was actually there. Like, this is the first scene from season 4. So,
right, I do definitely remember some wild spinning camera work. I don't feel like I have enough to really go on there. What were they fighting, or what were they?
They were like going into a nebula.
Oh, okay.
Nothing or like some anomaly.
Sometimes you got to spin it.
It was they were flying nebula. The ship into scary red space and had to do a spinning maneuver.
Okay. Yeah, I don't have strong feelings about that. My main thing with the Academy is that I'm sad that Tilly's not going to be more heavily featured. But I did like, you know, I do think that the crew they've got looked fun. I remember that there's a guy that's kind of being a little drill sergeant-y. Like maybe, I think he had an English accent. And he was kind of doing the snap to kind of thing. Just for a scene or two that I thought was interesting. And I guess we got our first sense of the kid who got kidnapped by or taken by Paul Giamatti. Or no, not he wasn't taken, his mother.
Yeah. His She-Hulk mom.
Right.
This kid, Caleb, I guess it kind of seems like he's going to be like the main kid. He's going to be like Holly Hunter's little protege.
Right. And I love Holly Hunter. So I'm excited to check it out.
The big thing is that we now have a release date, January 15th. So when the show does premiere in January, we'll be covering it weekly. They haven't set this as an official thing yet, but I think it's likely it'll be a two-episode premiere because that's what they've been doing with most seasons of Star Trek the last few years. So it'll probably be two episodes that first week and then one episode a week after that if they continue that pattern. But in the lead up to it, Taylor and I have planned out some content for the foreseeable future of Tex Trek. After we finish these next few weeks of Star Trek Con, after the audio drama releases its final episode, November 3rd, we'll of course discuss that finale episode that week. And then after that, we'll do a couple shows we've talked about before. A backtracking retrospective on the TOS episode Space Seed. We'll go back and look at the debut appearance of Khan after getting this new context from the audio drama. And then the week after that, we'll do a show called The Wrath of Khan Revisited, when we go back and take a look at all of the Khan scenes of Wrath of Khan. We don't need to, like, watch Savick do the Kobayashi Maru again, but all the Khan stuff, you know, will probably lens a little differently now going forward. And then after November, we want to spend a lot of time in December and early January looking at some Academy episodes from Legacy Star Trek. So I got to do The First Duty, one of my all-time favorite episodes of The Next Generation. But also a coming of age with that season one episode where Wes is taking like the entrance exams, maybe a couple other Academy episodes. And also we're going to want to take a look at some Doctor episodes from Voyager, because we're going to get, you know, it's funny, Dave, it is sad that we're only going to get one episode of Tilly next year, but we're going to get 10 episodes of the Doctor next year.
I mean, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. By the way, Father, I think you should include the School of Hard Knocks that Charlie X had to go through under Captain Kirk's tutelage, getting thrown around, judo thrown, and Kirk explaining the birds and the bees to him. Sure. I think that's an important bit of schooling right there.
We'll watch that. And it's not Star Trek, but we'll just go ahead and throw in Jack Black's School of Rock.
Yes, yeah. There's probably a Trek connection in there somewhere.
I'm sure. I've never seen it, so maybe. Who knows?
Oh, man, that's a good movie.
Well, I don't have anything else that is news-related, so we can go ahead and start talking about this episode of Khan. But
first, Fathery, I have to tell you, I got my mind took just 1 second. I've got the Star Trek relation to it. Sarah Silverman plays the wife of his best friend, of course, Sarah Silverman guest starred in Voyager.
Yeah, so,
there we go.
In two episodes of Star Trek, technically, because that was a two-parter.
Oh, so that's true.
She is a Star Trek recurring character.
Yep.
Fun stuff.
This is like the relation to Kevin Bacon thing y'all are doing, but with Star Trek.
Yeah. There's always got to be something.
It's pretty easy to do. Even with like a lot of like older movies, there's so many, you know, TOS actors, so it's not hard.
But yeah, that, you know, that'd be really a fun little aside to do sometime is play the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon with Star Trek. See how close you could get stuff to Trek. I don't know, when y'all are bored, or maybe during one of the watch-alongs.
Yeah, or on the long flight to Star Trek Las Vegas next year.
Yeah.
Well, moving into I Am Marla, I'm just going to quickly recap the episode by reading the synopsis, and then I'll expand on that with spoilers. But the synopsis reads, Forging a tenuous alliance, Khan's followers and the Elborians work toward possible mutual survival. As Khan weighs hard choices affecting both peoples, tragedy strikes. And yes, Khan has to figure out what to do with Ivan, what to do with not being the guy who's the head honcho, you know, the buck stops with me. I have to share leadership responsibilities. I have to share decision making with this alien, Delmonda. But they have to figure out what to do with Ivan, this guy who's committed murder, this guy who is being this criminal element in this peaceful society they're trying to build. So while Khan is struggling with that and honestly toying with the idea of, you know, kind of showing some growth and development, at least like he sees like the possibility, you know, he has like a few lines like I'm learning to compromise and stuff like that. But while he's struggling with those options and those decisions, of course, Marla MacGyver's is finally ill-attacked and has to make the choice between do we save the mom or the baby kind of thing. And of course, Marla is doomed to die, as we knew going into this audio drama. So, but we end the thing with a little bit of new information that the spaceship we learned about last episode that the Elborians are building, it can hold four people. So
yeah, they've made it tricky as to who all might get out.
Yeah, I mean, we know Delmonda is sending emails to Dr. Lear at some point in the future, so he's probably going to make it out of there. But
what if it's somebody wearing a Delmonda skin mask?
Yeah, just
it's shapeshifters all along.
Y'all just watch Texas Chainsaw Massacre. There could be some evil Ed Gein type. You know, Ivan survives, and he's got the Delmonda mask.
That would be a twist I didn't see coming.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's seen that one yet. I like to throw out my long shots in case anybody wants to go and put some betting odds on it.
Well, Dave, why don't you give us the first opening statement and just say your broad thoughts on the episode?
You know, I didn't really have time to make notes on this one, so I'll be a little bit more off the cuff. But I did jot down a few things just for the intro. And the main thing I sort of wanted to emphasize about this is actually something I've kind of talked about before, which is that I'm shocked to the degree to which this show is suspenseful and can surprise me, even though we have the outcome of the basics are all out there. Mm-hmm. Because we had already seen, you know, they had shown Khan kind of trying to be his best, put his best foot forward early on in the show, and then sort of continually being sort of drawn down by his sort of warlike tendencies. And I was like, oh, well, when these aliens show up, he's going to go into survival mode. And that's the end of that arc. Now is the beginning of his tyrannical survivalist arc. And I was like, oh shit, no, they're not. It's nothing as simple as that. He's still trying. He's making a last ditch effort, maybe inspired by, you know, his family, you know, the possibility of having a kid and his closeness to Marla. So I loved seeing that, you know, he's actually like trying with Delmonda, or at least seems to be. He's not what he tells Ivan. But it seems like he's trying to stretch one last time before the shit will hit the fan. And so I've really, really liked that. And I liked all the other surprises. There's other surprises in there, too. Like, what is it? Like, yeah, you said four people could escape. That's opens up all sorts of little doors. And it means that, yes, I know that we're going to get something like we expected, which is that, is it Dr. Lear? Is she a doctor?
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Lear has some relation, is Marlon Khan's kid or whatever. But I don't know what all else we might get out of it. It feels like there's going to be multiple surprises on that front. We saw what Ursula and Ivan forming their little subversive coalition, which I was like, oh, that's going to be a problem.
yeah.
And then by the, you know, I got kind of so caught up in it that I didn't even think about the possibility that this is when Marla goes. I think we all thought that was maybe going to happen earlier. And here we are near to the end of it. This is very much her story. They didn't let her go by the wayside in these eight episodes. It's called Khan, but, you know, we got an episode called I Am Marla at the, 3/4 point-ish, something like that. So yeah, I was really enjoying that, and seeing Khan kind of twist and turn to see if he can build a coalition with these aliens, and then maybe he's being subversive, and at the same time, Ivan is trying to trick him into this to being poison. So there's multiple kind of moments of trickery going on, and I continue to really like oh my gosh, Paolo, that's his name, right? He's the enjoying him, and I guess we probably got more of a showcase of Joachim in this one, but I was shocked that a supporting character would end up like one of my favorites, and Paolo is getting there, man. The one last thought I want to say is, because I was talking about how much the writing reminded me, or I was reminded that like I really want good writing to always be at the heart of Star Trek, and they had such good writing to kick off the show. It's like a trademark of it that I'm lobbying for David Mack to be in the writers' room
Yeah,
on
no,
some upcoming Trek show.
we need Kirsten Beyer to be the showrunner on a show with
Right,
like
they're kind of, they
with
have a
David
team
Mack as
thing.
like the head writer.
Yes, I would love a voice on a show that was something like what we're getting here. Because it's got depth of character, there's big action and stuff still going on, there's mo the moral dilemmas I want from Star Trek. Like, I feel like it's hitting all the things I want. And at the same time, I'm getting a little bit of fan service with Tuvok and Sulu and all that. So anyway, I continue to enjoy it, and I'm working with the one part that I kind of felt a little tentative about, which is the I think the Elborians, the Elbs, as they're calling them, that they just felt a little out of place, as far as like that's the biggest expanded universe thing that we've seen so far, and I'm like, well, it's so far from what I expected that my mind is continuing to try and work to wrap around it, but I like what they're doing with them, so I'm working with it. It's as close as I get to a complaint, really, I guess.
Miss Taylor, tell us your opening statement thoughts before we go into our episode breakdown. What's your broad takeaway on I Am Marla?
To say I was sobbing at the end is an understatement. I was actually really mad about a lot, which we can go into later, but a lot of the things I was really hoping wouldn't happen are happening in this episode, regarding like Marla's pregnancy. So I don't know. Some of that was a little disappointing to me, but I liked, Khan and Ivan interaction. I liked Khan and Delmonda's interaction. Again, was excited to see more Ursula. I think she might be one of my favorite characters in this, just because I feel like she's just so angry and like, I don't know. She always kind of surprises me. Like when she softens and when she hardens, like it's always a little bit interesting. Like I loved getting like her flip, the like her being against Khan now. And kind of like that was like a really big reveal to me. Like I didn't see that coming.
She's walking a sort of like knife's edge where I'm like, she didn't fully say, "Oh, I'm behind you, Ivan. Like, I'll do any, we got to do this." She said, "I don't know whether to wish you success or failure." And I'm like, "Oh, that makes her an interesting and kind of dynamic character in this."
But whenever Mado kind of says, we have to serve Khan or we'll die, and Ursula says, I think we serve Khan and we die. And I was like, oh yeah, she's done. But yeah, I liked a lot of that. I was really sad about Marla. I mean, everything that happened to Marla in this episode makes me really sad to talk about. Yeah, overall, I do think it was a good episode. It's pushing the story forward. And I'm kind of like scared with how little there is left to go through, like with only two more episodes and a lot to wrap up.
I wonder if there's any possibility that a bunch of the last episode will be in the present.
That'd be cool. I would like that.
And maybe like with the reveal that like, well, if Delmonda could show up, other people that we think died on SETI Alpha 5 could show up. Ivan could show up in the Delmonda skin mask. But I says certainly Dr. Lear will have some notable stuff going on too.
Yeah, I think for what's left of the story, that's what I'm most excited about. Like everything else, now that we were like deep in Marla's fate, the most I'm excited about right now is figuring out who Dr. Lear is and I'm kind of like curious how much Tuvok is going to discover, or is she going to tell him, you know, with like all that. So yeah, I'm excited for more, but I'm warier now. I feel like this episode, as good as it was, it really knocked me down in excitement.
It's not going to be as good of an ending as what you were hoping for now. Some of the possibilities have been eliminated. So
yeah, exactly.
Anyone hoping for like a happy Marla alive and well to somehow miraculously have survived? Which I always thought like they weren't going to retcon her death was the one thing I was pretty sure of. They wouldn't change, but...
Did I miss... I didn't remember that. Were you rallying for the possibility that Marla lives?
Yeah. I was thinking maybe like Karn would be so far gone that she escapes with her baby pregnant and he thinks that she gets killed.
Or
and
they Ursula, fake it or somebody covers.
Ursula like helps cover them. Yeah. So I'm a little bit sad that we're not getting that. But it's fine. Like they can do whatever they
just
want.
Ask
but
this.
It's gonna take me a while.
This is a messed up thing to ask, but because we see the scene where they're talking about it and they say they can't remove the SETI eel. I think Khan is there for that. Mm-hmm. What if that was all a show for Khan? What if it was?
If they had this whole conspiracy.
It would be great because it's not like we saw any behind the scenes thing. It's not like we heard Marla talking separate from Khan. I don't think. Maybe I'm wrong. And that would be we would have heard the same show they're performing for Khan. I'm just throwing it out there. Four seats. Yeah. What else? Who else would be interesting to have in there? The rock and roll listening to Elborians.
Yeah.
Or pop rock, whatever they were listening to.
Yeah, they're going to go up in that ship like Zefram Cochrane in First Contact.
Yeah. My bets are on the baby and Paolo for the two humans that go.
Jamming out to Steppenwolf.
Yeah, but Father, I don't know if this was actual. I assume it was original music that they did for this. It sounded a little bit more like, I don't know, kind of like 90s pop to me.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just very ambiguous music from some decade.
Yeah. What if it was Guar?
Yeah, it would have been cool, but it also would have been more expensive than whatever they just paid to create.
Yeah,
but...
no doubt. Anyway, what Father, I'm sorry. Or Taylor, were you done? I didn't.
Yeah, I'm done enough. I'll say more later.
Sure.
Well, for me, like Dave, I'm really excited that at this point in the final three episodes, we still have so much to be excited about, and there's still reveals that we're looking forward to. You know, despite knowing the conclusion is going to be The Wrath of Khan, this movie from the 80s that most of us have seen 100 times. So not only is this audio drama succeeding at telling an interesting story despite us knowing where it leads, but it also does some really great traditional Star Trek thinking. Like, this episode in particular, it asks a lot of questions about how to handle peaceful individuals in a peaceful society when they have to deal with an unpeaceful person causing problems. You know, there's this whole conversation of how much of a responsibility does the community have to rehabilitate this other individual versus, you know, at what point do you say, okay, they've crossed the line. We're just going to have to excommunicate them. So I like that, you know, it's asking these questions, that it's doing this kind of traditional Star Trek thought experiment. It is kind of a standard thing, you know, two crews from two different ships stranded on a desert island with limited resources, and that's
usually the Elborians would be the heroes. Here they're arguably the antagonists, in the sense that Khan and his guys are at least our protagonists. You're totally right, Father. Like they're handling it with some nuance, even though it is a kind of traditional Trek concept.
Yeah, but that's a good point that I hadn't considered, that, you know, having kind of that role reversal of the antagonist and the protagonist, that does make it a bit more subversive than I was giving the overall story credit for. So
it's kind of like in like Breaking Bad or something, where you follow somebody who's doing some pretty devious stuff for a while, but they are the lead and you do get invested in them succeeding. So yeah, we like kind of want Khan to succeed or to somehow avoid his trajectory if he can help it, even though we know he can't. And but we don't know how things end up with the Alborians.
And I've compared this audio drama a bit to Macbeth, which I feel is like the granddaddy of those stories, where the protagonist is both he's the good guy and the bad guy of the story at the same time. You know, he's the protagonist and the antagonist.
You watch his downfall.
Yeah. And I think that is, you know, where I want things to end up with Khan. That is kind of my fear, is that I don't want Khan's peaceful colony idea to have been ruined because of Ivan or because of some Seti eels. I want it to be because of Khan's own, his hubris and arrogance and ambition. And that, like, it doesn't matter what century he's in, what planet he's on, he's always going to bring himself down.
I agree. I do hope that that's where they're going. I think that that's where they're going. But they surprised me by suggesting at least a second chance for him in this one. What, do y'all think he was, like, telling the truth? That, like, he told Ivan, he's like, oh, I'm playing him. He's like, you know, if, you know, we'll find out what we can, and then I'll, you know, do what I need to do, or whatever it was he said. I was like, how sincere was he when he was offering to compromise?
Yeah.
I guess we can hash that out when we get to the scene.
Yeah.
Let's get into our episode breakdown then, just starting off briefly with some Tuvok and Lear at the beginning. Lear apologizes to Tuvok about yelling at him at the end of the episode last time, right, when she was freaking out about finding that Tuvok had been spying on her. She talks a little bit more about herself in that the area of her studies is the sexy topic, the quote unquote sexy topic of augment discrimination. And she's just telling Tuvok, like, oh yeah, you know, it's really interesting. All these people that are discriminated against are having just like a little bit of augment DNA. And
he's all like, you know, Starfleet's going to be less likely than anybody to do that. And she's like, you'd be surprised. That's a little kind of Deep Space Nine type sentiment working its way in there.
But she claims that that's why Delmonda contacted her with, like, oh, I have all these logs and recordings and stuff about Khan, this augment from the eugenics wars on Seti Alpha 5. And Tuvok doesn't believe, like, he calls bullshit on her. He's like, yeah. I don't know why you're lying, but you clearly are.
Yeah, that was, I like them letting these characters kind of have these,
mm-hmm.
kind of like harsh kind of moments. They butt heads hard, but they both also softened a little bit. He was like, no, you were right to be angry. I was spying on you.
Yeah. Yeah. They start off kind of like apologizing to each other and forgiving each other, but then they end on kind of negative terms again. Cause then Tuvok is like, well, don't be surprised if you get more anti-tampering device notifications. You know, I'm going to keep spying on you.
Until yeah.
And Lear kind of freaks out a little bit. She's kind of like having to calm herself down. She's like, just stop it. Control yourself.
She's got big secrets. What were you saying, Taylor?
She's hiding something.
Yeah, I took it as Tuvok just kind of being like, hey, I have to still follow orders. Like, he's like, I want to be on your side, but I don't believe you. And, like, I don't know. I think it's cool for him to still be, like, honest with Sulu and, like, make reports. But I feel like Tuvok still isn't, like, going to go running to Sulu, like, yeah, she's definitely conspiratorial. I don't know. Like, I feel like he's going to keep it pretty tame for him. But Tuvok, I think, is just, like, piqued in curiosity. So he's just like, let's see how this plays out, you know?
Yeah,
like,
I think he's developed a level of respect for her and maybe kind of wants her to, like, have some justification for lying. And, you know, doesn't want it to just be that it's, you know, she's being duplicitous to, you know, advance herself or some secret mission or something like that. I think he's like, I think he wants her to be honest with him and reveal all whatever the painful secret is. But he kind of comes at things, you know, kind of hard ass, kind of cop style, and they've got to work around that. I liked when he talked about a slightly more nuanced way of the can Vulcans lie or not, and he's like, well, it's really difficult for us, and some of us can't do it at all, and so it's a big thing for us. Truth is a big thing for us.
Mm-hmm. He was like, Vulcans are BS detectors, is kind of like what I got from that line. He was like, yeah, I like picked up on your lying immediately as a Vulcan. Yeah. So I thought that was kind of fun to hear from him, especially knowing like about his little bit of like Vulcan rebelliousness as a teenager or whatever. So that's kind of fun.
Yeah. She definitely panicked at the end there, though. She was like, she was having an anxiety attack.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, what is the secret?
So, like, I feel like the most obvious thing is that, like,
she's got augment DNA.
Well, that she is Khan and Marla's baby, and that at one point Delmonda flees Seti Alpha 5 with her.
Why would that need to be a secret?
Yeah.
I mean,
because she doesn't want to live as an augment in the Federation.
I mean, that makes sense. And I guess she's risking that.
And maybe she thinks if she can find out, like, oh, actually, Khan wasn't that bad of a guy, maybe she thinks that'll lead to an end to augment discrimination.
Right. Whereas what may come out will be more like, Khan was that bad of a guy, or became that bad of a guy, but also you are correct that there's unfair discrimination, and, you know, Tuvok may be like, let me do what I can to help you out. What if Tuvok maroons her death? Kirk style.
It could be something else as her secret, but I just feel like that's the most obvious thing right now. Or at least, like, in my mind, that's the most obvious.
They don't have a lot of episodes left for big twists, but there's definitely going to be something.
Yeah, another, I think this is very far-fetched, but what if Dr. Lear is an Elborian, and she's, like, in disguise as a human?
She talks.
Somehow.
She has vocal cords. She talks.
Oh, okay. We'll pitch that one way out then.
Or do they think that she talks because she makes their mind see her mouth move, but then she's an advanced telepath? That feels like something an advanced telepath could do. I do think that, like, Kirsten Beyer and David Mack probably they're for sure going to be at least one or two, maybe up to three twists on expectations in these last two episodes to come.
Well, let's move on to the flashback to Marla's log. She's making a entry talking about how she misses the sunrise out on the sea. They don't have that anymore with the fallout of Seti Alpha 6 and the now clouded sky they have to live under on Seti Alpha 5. This is interesting stuff, though. She talks about, like, you know, that was dependable and constant to see the sunrise over the sea every morning. But I guess it actually isn't that dependable and constant. So maybe it never was to begin with. And
I didn't realize that's a visual metaphor for kind of some of what's going on in this episode. Khan not being as Khan seemingly bending on some of his, his authoritarian tendencies. Ivan certainly not the loyalist that he has been known to be.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So. Something that Marla mentions when she says, maybe at one point Khan was this guy, or I'm sorry, maybe at one point Ivan was this guy that Khan wants him to still be, but, you know, I hope that he was, but it doesn't seem like he is anymore, if he ever was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, they exchanged some harsh words. You know, if I thought Tuvok and Lear got a little snippy with each other, Khan and Ivan go at it, man.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say that this episode is very heavy-handed, too, like, on re-listen of, like, Marla's demise in this episode. Like, many times she's like, I'm dying to do this. I can't not, like, live without having done this or whatever. Like, there's multiple times where it's very heavy on the foreshadowing, like, on re-listen.
Oh.
You know, it's like, funny, I didn't notice that.
I didn't notice any of that either.
There's a bunch of...
But I also only listened once.
Okay. Yeah, there's, like, a few lines where she's, like, impending doom. But she's, like, saying it, and it's ironic when you're, like, listening back. You're like, oh, shit, like, this is her last day, you know? And, like... This, when she's talking about, like, the sunrise on the sea, kind of makes me also feel like that's a foreshadowing for her, you know? Like, I don't know. Just, ugh, I'm mad about it. So, okay, sorry, we'll get to that later. But,
I mean, that was, like, the most set-in-stone thing. You know, it's kind of like Peter Parker's Uncle Ben has to die.
I guess, yeah, I don't want to talk with that. I don't want to, like, rush forward on it. But, like, I'm not mad about her dying. I'm mad about, like, how and what happened. So. We'll get into it later. But
we'll come to
anyways,
it. Yep, yep.
So Khan and Delmonda also have a discussion in this about their shared prisoner, Ivan. I thought that was this is like when they're talking about, like, well, what do we do with him? Like, how do we compromise together, right?
Yeah.
And Khan's like, oh, well, this is going to be incredibly difficult. And Delmonda's like, well, what about this? And then they, and he's like, oh, well, that'd probably be okay. And he's like, see, we can do it. And yeah, I guess this, that is the question, is like, was Khan being sincere there, or was
right?
I we know that he at least told Ivan, he's like, yes, I'm playing him.
Yeah.
And I think that's partially true. I kind of appreciate the ambiguity where we're like, well, if you yourself are kind of taken with Khan and want to think that he meant more than he didn't mean, then you can take it that way. But I have a feeling that he was fairly truthful to Ivan.
There's two conversations, I guess, between Khan and Ivan in this episode. We get one here and then one at the almost at the very end. And the one that we get here, though, when Khan talks to prisoner Ivan for the first time after he'd been taken prisoner by the Elborians, Ivan, he's saying, it's kind of what Taylor was talking about last week when you were gone, Dave, but mm-hmm. Taylor was pointing out that Khan sent Ivan out on recon when he went and killed an Elborian.
Mm-hmm.
Ivan said, I'll go watch them and I'll learn how to kill them. And Taylor is like, well, the only way that you learn how to kill something is if you actually kill it. So, and Ivan kind of at this point, you know, he kind of admits, he's like, you know, like, I told you I was going out there to do reconnaissance. Like, now we know if we find one by themselves, they're weak. They can be killed. And
by the way, I got to say, like, I know that, like, Ivan is not the brains of the outfit. But aren't there like 400 of these dudes? You know, you can't just be picking off 400 fucking dudes and think that they're not going to notice and use their super mind powers to crush you.
Well, when you're like, a hammer, every problem looks like a nail kind of thing.
he's a larger than life character, but I think kind of fits. He, especially in this sort of, if I think of him as like kind of with a TOS look to him, you know, it'd be kind of fun to cast him with an actor from the 60s. For the visual and not sort of look, imagine how he looked in the modern times, but kind of how he looked then. And there, you know, the there was a bigness to Star Trek, you know, that pretty much there always is. But, you know, a lot of people, some people will say it's over the top, you know, in TOS. And I think Ivan fits that.
I always totally. Picture him wearing like one of the red jumpsuits they were wearing in Space Seed. So that's how I picture this Russian brute.
I assume that they've modded them a little bit. You know, I bet it looks a little bit more survivalist-y and there's more kind of gear and maybe like some furs or, you know, some leather gloves and things that they've made since getting there. But I do think that the red jumpsuits would be a part of it. I hope people do some fan art of this because I'd love to see it. This partially ashen sky that they've got now, that giant underground lake with portions of a ship beside it. There's lots of what would I think would be cool visuals. I want to see the kids out on the plateau jamming out to their music.
Yeah. I mean, they could always make an animated version of this. But in this conversation between Khan and Ivan, the truth does come out about Hugo. Ivan admits to killing Hugo.
Right.
So.
That, yeah. I forgot that it was a confession. Mm-hmm. Khan might have suspected it before, but he's just straight up said it.
Yeah. Like, whenever Ivan is mad about Khan, like, not being as strong of a leader, and he is like, I even tolerated your wife. Like, he's like listing all of these complaints he has about Khan.
Because he's jealous.
Yeah.
Ivan is in love with Khan, and he's so jealous. Like, this thing with Marla, he's like, oh, like, they're married and she's pregnant. I guess this is permanent.
Yeah,
I guess I've really lost him forever now.
Yeah. So it's extremely, I don't know, an intense conversation, but it's also just like this like impending doom, like the entire, because you're also thinking like, oh, well, Khan and like Delmonda just discussed Ivan, and like, we know, like, Ivan's kind of going to get off easy, like, he doesn't know that yet, kind of thing. But I don't know. It's just, it's really dark.
There's like this sense of fate hanging over a lot of things in this episode. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just like this really, like, Ivan's like this anchor in the past, and he's like mad that everyone's moving forward and like changing and like, you know, adapting. And he's like, hell no, you know? And like, obviously, like, that's his downfall here is like just being stuck in this past. And like, Marla discusses this with Delmonda about him having like this, he's like war torn, right? That's like all he's known.
Yeah, and Khan mentions, he's like, you've saved my life many times.
Yeah. I really thought that Khan would have killed Ivan here. Like, maybe, like, in Space Seed, if any of this transpired, Khan would have just killed Ivan, I feel like. And, like, because we have, like, some character growth here, like, he doesn't. And, like, there's other things hanging in the air.
Since
like,
he and, who's it, Delmonda? Since he and Delmonda had decided Ivan's fate, if Khan had let his anger take control and his need for justice or vengeance, and he had killed Ivan, how would Delmonda have taken it?
Yeah,
would he
exactly.
have said, "Oh, I guess we're not"?
Yeah, that's the reason why Khan doesn't kill him. Like, later.
I know, but that's what I'm saying. Is like, it's just it's wild that we have like this big change in Khan, and like that's what Ivan's pissed about, right? Is like this big change in Khan, and like we're actively.
He's like, you're a cuck now, Khan.
You're
a soy
but it's
boy.
Like also Ivan, you get to live now because of that. So like,
right?
Maybe
he's,
chill.
I think he's well, that'll be a problem later that Ivan doesn't want to live. Mm. You know, he's like when we get to it, like he's like literally like in tears. You know, like please kill me. Like how can you not kill me right now?
Yeah. That's some good writing. That was cool. Like he's like pissed that Khan doesn't have it in him to kill him.
Yeah,
for his betrayal.
That's on. I put on my notes as moving day / deal with Ivan day because that comes up on the same day. You know, they're moving their settlement into the caves, but it's also the day that Delmonda and Khan have designated they will decide the fate of Ivan. There's some things that happen before that, though, that I want to cover real quick.
Mm-hmm.
Marla and Khan have a little conversation discussing baby names, kind of like our last, like, cutesy moment between, cutesy happy family moment between the two of them. But they decide on a Kali, the Hindu goddess.
Mm-hmm. With lots of connotations that come with it. And an interesting conversation from Khan, who we know doesn't hold religious beliefs.
Yeah.
Yeah, what does he say? He's like, it doesn't even matter. He's like, you know, what it means, you know, it's about like the an expression of somebody traveling through the universe or how the universe defines itself. I didn't write anything down for this, but it was an interesting conversation, I found.
But yeah, I thought it was cool to talk about how, oh yeah, humans create all these gods and mythologies just to give names and faces and I guess like an identity to eternal concepts, you know, like sunrises, like Marla was talking about at the very beginning, or, you know, like rivers or the moon or, you know, like anything like that throughout history. Humans associate, you know, kind of like personalities and identities to these things, and we come up with these god characters as a way of thinking about those concepts.
Yeah, and I think that was a pretty cool way, pretty cool read on it. And, you know, we know that Khan is not above like figurative speaking; that he takes inspiration from Moby Dick and Paradise Lost.
Yeah,
I know
he loves literature.
He has a poetic turn of voice sometimes, so thinking in sort of symbolic ways is something that comes naturally to him. I think that was probably the writers working some of this out, like, oh, you know, what does he think about that? You know, why does, you know, if there's no sense of spirituality in him, then how do some of these voices that might have a spiritual overtones, why does he find meaning in it? And we see now he's like, oh, well, they're expressing universal truths. They just happen to do it through religion sometimes, or, you know, this kind of imagery.
And that's the type of character exploration that is much more common to do in a novel or a TV show these days, but you can't really get into in a movie or like an episode of the week type appearance like Space Seed.
Although it is interesting to see how Space Seed, you know, most of the stuff that they're exploring in this was at least broached in Space Seed, you know, the idea of...
That was a hell of a seed, that episode. They planted something.
They did. But certainly they talked about, you know, our infatuation with conquerors and stuff like that, their charismatic nature, and Kirk's desire to see him be better than he kind of was. Like, that was all in there. So, you know, kudos to OG writers.
And they also talk a little bit about, you know, I guess like a debate of 19th century poets, of, you know, Keats and Coleridge and Wordsworth and all that. But this is also when we get Paulo jamming out to Ivan's boombox, and he's joined by Joachim and Erica when they're jamming out, and the Elborians that are out there to monitor the debris coming into the atmosphere, you know, they're trying to calculate launch vectors.
Or so they say.
But it's true. I took it at face value, but...
Well, they did, you know, Khan was right. That leaked to the younger augments, and then to the rest of the colony, the ship plan and all of that. And I'm wondering if, you know, I don't know exactly what Zomanda seems to be. He seems to be, would you all say he seems to be the sort of kind, thoughtful person he claims?
Yeah, I said last week he's like the cool version of Khan. He's like, oh, like this exile got kicked off of his planet. He's just trying to look after his people and establish a new colony on this world. And is like, but he actually has like pretty cool values and seems like an all right guy. So he's like the cool version of Khan, I said.
Yeah, he said that in this one that they were going to like, that they would accept that some of their own people would go to another, what, settlement point, like 1,000 kilometers away, and that they were willing to risk it. But he's not wrong that he did sort of force Khan's hand by, you know, getting that out there. And, you know, I do wonder if there's, Delmond is a little bit more sophisticated than has been let on.
Yeah, I just took them at face value that these aliens are just like, oh, that music sounds cool. We've never heard that before. We'll spill all the beans on the spaceship if you let us hear more of this cool sound. But they were also kind of like, oh, please don't hurt us, because after what Ivan did, they're kind of scared.
Yeah, the sound effects on that in that previous episode, I wasn't here to talk about it with y'all, but that was like, that was brutal.
That was nasty.
They really went to town with that beatdown. I see in the audience, Joanne says she's not convinced that Delmonda is being forthcoming. I do wonder about that. Like, we haven't seen him be overtly duplicitous, but I felt like we've seen him manipulate a little bit, which admittedly is probably the smart play. If you're smart enough to know that somebody like Khan is a real danger, you know, then you kind of have to handle them. You know, they have to be dealt with in such a way that they don't get triggered and go full, you know, kill mode. You got to kind of see how you can work with this dude.
Yeah. I also feel like I took this more at face value. Like, okay, I don't think they're like trying to be extra manipulative, but I do think it is possible they were trying to feel out more of Khan's people, because Zomanda keeps being like, is Khan like Khan and Ivan, like these are the ones he's interacted with the most, and he keeps asking like, is this what it like a normal person is like for your group? And so I feel like it was almost like reconnaissance of the Elborians to like run into the kids. Because I think they're like, well, let's see what the kids are like. Like, are they cool? Like, or have they been like indentured already into this like war mind, you know?
I think it was just a coincidence. I think they were just up on the mesa because that's where they needed like the view of the debris.
But Khan did point it out. He like he
that's, and I think that's Khan being paranoid and kind of
I mean, that's fair.
Writers put it in there to be like, look how weird and untrusting.
Right.
This is
how he sees everything through that lens. Yeah. I did really like that scene, by the way. And you know, like it's not, it gives you these moments in what is really a big tragedy where, you know, like, oh, cool, there was this scene where like basically the teenagers kind of had a moment, right? They had, you know, before everything went to shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they got to like celebrate and just be kids and experience alien interaction, first contact.
Yeah, and later Marla even comments on like, look, that's how it should be. This young human excited to talk to a new alien. You know, like that's what the 23rd century is normally like.
Yep.
We also get the scene between Ursula and Mado when Ursula, I guess, is trying to, like, nurse Mado back to good health. She's trying to get her to eat, and Mado is depressed after losing the baby and is blaming herself, and Ursula is blaming Khan, and it's, you know, Mado's like, well, it wasn't Khan's fault that the other planet blew up, and Ursula's like, no, but it's his fault that we're stuck here. You know, he didn't have to try to take over the Enterprise, and so Ursula's... She's in her grief, she's like, she is done with Khan. She is like, yeah. This guy cannot be trusted to lead us anymore. He's a moron. I'm done with him.
Yeah, it felt reasonable. We've seen, you know, we saw even in the first episode, who was the guy, Hugo? Was you know, calling out Khan for making bad decisions here and there. And, you know, there was some truth in what he said. You know, he might have been, you know, just, you know, making a power play, but there was definitely still some truth in what he said. And, you know, we talked about Khan's relative victories versus losses. And yeah, he kind of has had some big ones. He got to run Earth. He got to take over the Enterprise. But it does seem like he does set himself up for failure, too. Yeah, at a certain point, some of these people, especially if they're looking to build lives for, like, children, they're like, oh, fuck this.
But then we have moving day / deal with Ivan day. And this starts with Marla is going to lead everyone carrying the supplies into the caves while Khan goes off to Delmonda to deal with Ivan. And there's the, I guess it's the last conversation before Marla's ill attack between Marla and Khan. But Khan tells her, you know, look, at the end of the day, when y'all get everything moved into the cave and you go and chill and have your hot springs bath, have someone in there standing guard over you just to keep an eye on you. And, like, it didn't even occur to me there, like, me anything neither. Bad would happen. Maybe no. That should have been, like, a red flag. Maybe that should have been, like, a red alert moment. But
I like when that happens, to be honest, because it means that I'm, like, enmeshed enough in the story yeah. that I'm not analyzing it. And, like there are times even in, like, really good things that I do kind of step outside it a little bit and I can sort of see the currents of the arcs and stuff. But yeah, I was completely clueless about this one.
Y'all crack me up because as soon as she is like, I'm going to try out those hot springs, I was like, no, it's too soon. I don't know you're why. Like, you're going I was, to like, the death I was like, that is not good. So... yeah, I was
just like, oh, this is cute. She's like, oh, hey, Joachim, tell Khan that I live here now. And I was like, oh,
see? What a that's cute another scene. Thing. She lives there now. Like, that to me feels a little bit foreshadowy of, like, she's done. Like, I don't know. Like, that kind of seemed a little foreshadowing to her death, too. And I don't know.
You live here now? You actually die here now.
You die here now. Yeah, like, there's irony in some of the things that she's saying. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah.
Ugh, gross.
It's almost like this was written by, like, a novelist.
Yeah.
But yeah, Marla's going to go handle the moving, the young people excited to hear about the spaceship. And Ursula goes and has a drink with Ivan in captivity. She like tells like the guards like, oh, Khan wants me to see the prisoner. She gets in there, and this is when Ivan says, oh, I have this wine from Kashmir years ago. I'm gonna offer Khan a drink. I'll ask for forgiveness and grovel and apologize, and then when he has this drink, it'll be laced with cyanide. So Ivan is claiming there, you know, he has this plan to poison Khan and then take over as the new leader, and then he'll kill all the Elborians, or at least most of them, and then make some of them their servants. And Ursula seems on board with this. I think at this point, Ivan, he's already accepted that Khan will never love him. He's heartbroken, and he's decided, like, I'm going to attack Khan. I'm going to offer him this poison, knowing that he'll know that it's poison, and then he'll kill me.
That's
it's like suicide by betrayal.
It's the if I can't have you, no one else can trope.
Yeah, or kind of like if I can't have you, then I don't want to live anymore.
And he didn't just like sort of test the waters with Ursula. He told her everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was also drunk.
He knew, though, I think that he was like in his mind, because it's life for a life. Like, he knew he was on the chopping block. So he's like, what the hell? Like, I don't have much to lose, you know?
Right.
In his mind, I think he already felt like a dead man.
But yeah, like good performance from the Ivan voice actor. I should learn who's doing that. But very, very evil and ominous.
But it was also interesting to see him bond a little bit with Ursula, like when he's, you know, when they are, you know, talking about it. And I guess he does this with Khan too. I might be blurring it a little bit when they talk about saving that model. But yeah, there's a little bit of that. Hey, remember the old days?
You know? And one thing that they've established with Ursula is that she is slow to trust. You know, it took a long time before Marla could get on Ursula's good side. And with these Elborians showing up, Ursula is kind of on the more, you know, she's the more conservative, the more hawkish, the more paranoid, the more fearful camp that Ivan leans towards. That, you know, this is unacceptable for them to have this big of a power advantage over us. Like, this is totally unacceptable. We have to neutralize this threat.
I wonder how much of it is that, and how much of it is, like, she has undirected anger and bitterness, and it just has to go somewhere.
And I think it's, like, a combination. I also think, you know, like, being someone who was just under the assumption they were going to become, like, a new parent, they're also, like, they're a bit more protective. And sometimes that can bring out hostility in people.
For sure.
But moving on past Ursula and Ivan, there's the Khan Delmonda conversation, where this is when Khan accuses Delmonda of, like, oh, you were intentionally leaking information to my people. It's like a power play, in which I think that was just, you know, Khan being a little.
What did Delmonda say to that? Get out of here.
Yeah, basically. He was like, of course you would think that.
Yeah.
It does seem that, like, Delmonda was prepared for this conversation. So I guess if he was being dishonest, like, you know, like, he was pretty careful to come up with all this stuff. Because he has answers for, like, all of Khan's questions.
I thought that was interesting. He was very, just very forthright, you know, and Khan's like, oh, so you're going to build a ship underground? How are you going to get it out? And he's like, we've mapped it out. He's like, there's a means of egress. Like, and he's like, well, what are you going to do about this? And he's like, we've thought about it. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to have hydroponics labs, even though there's no sea life in this. But, you know, it'll be enough to support, like, half of us. And, you know, it's very forthcoming.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess the plan is the four-person spaceship will go into space and then hopefully find someone who can help and then bring back help. Some new stuff that we learned in this episode.
Yeah, that's like big plan stuff. Like, if I was on, you know, among Khan's people, that would, you know, sound like the best possible answer is like, oh yeah, the people who know how to fly a spaceship and, you know, probably have star charts and shit, get those guys up into space. They seem benevolent too. We got really lucky here. Now, if I was one of Khan's people, I would also probably be more paranoid and stuff. So I wouldn't necessarily think that way, but...
Well, I think it's interesting because I think you see, like, such a different long-term goal. Like, when we're talking about that, like, Khan can't see that far ahead. Like, the only thing he can see is, like, I have to make this planet bend to my will, even when every single thing about this planet is saying I should leave this planet. And, like, he won't give that up. Like, even, like, when he's talking to Delmonda, he's like, how long do you think we can live down here? And then what's our next plan to stay here? And Delmonda's like, no. Like, we're getting a ship and, like, gonna find help and leave. But, like, for Khan, that's, like, admitting defeat, that he failed on this planet.
Yeah, like,
and,
like, he doesn't seem to know when to quit. That's kind of the thing in The Wrath of Khan. Like, not to cut you off, but I just want to also bring up that... In The Wrath of Khan, there's this moment between young Joachim in the future, years after this, is going to be on the bridge of the Reliant with Khan and telling him, like, hey, look, boss, you have Genesis. You got us off the planet. You won. You won, bro. We can get out of here and do whatever the hell we want. You know, we'll be cruising around with this weapon of mass destruction, the Genesis device. And like, Khan won't accept that. Like, he's got to have victory over Kirk. Mm-hmm. It's like, I almost wonder if Khan's retreat off of Earth when they launch in the Botany Bay and just, like, experiencing that, like, utter humiliation and defeat of being literally driven off the planet, if coming back from that, if that kind of like broke him, and now like it's just so hard for him to yield at all. He can't give up a single inch. He doesn't want to give up anything. That's why like it was so hard for him to capture so important for him to capture the Enterprise. That's why it's so important for him to build his empire on City Alpha 5. Like he was so defeated that he never wants to admit defeat ever again. Yeah. Something that you made me think of just
psychologically, it makes sense.
It also, yeah, because it also stems from them probably not being able to see very far in the future either, because they were bred to fight, right? And like born to fight and like probably die. Like they probably don't have like this like sense of like longevity, yeah, and like long-term goals for a people, you know?
He can conquer, but he can't rule. That's as old as time too.
Yeah. We also know that when the aliens arrived, the Oborians, that they were initially either like, you know, Ivan was just like, kill him. And Khan was more or less on board that too. And even like Joachim was just like, well, I guess we're killing him.
Yeah.
It's only when they had some time with them that they're, you know, Paolo and a few others started being like, oh, they're actually really amazing. Mm-hmm. You know, they had to like get used to the idea of sort of something outside the limited scope of what they'd been expecting of their lives through Khan.
Yeah. But I think it's also embarrassing to Khan realizing that Delmonda and the Alborians are like 10 steps ahead of him. You know, like they're like, we already have like an exit strategy, and like these are all of the limitations, and we've already worked through all of these limitations. And while y'all have been squabbling with each other and like barely figuring out how to move your camp from upside to in the cave and like containing your one person who keeps killing all these people, like while y'all were having this crazy like manic panic over there, like we've already figured out all of these things. Yeah, we've actually been working on this. And I'm sure that like crushed his ego. He's like, wow, how embarrassing. Like this is my planet. Like they already figured all this stuff out.
Well, so I was also thinking that from Khan's perspective, if they were to go ahead with Delmonda's plan, even if it all worked out in the best case scenario, well, what's he going to do? End up having to submit to the Federation, to Delmonda's people? You know, I think he's like, on this planet, I can be king. Elsewhere, there's no chance. These people are, the technology has evolved too far ahead of me. There's alien races I know nothing about. And he hasn't, I think, stated this. Like, hasn't had this discussion, but like, I can see why he would prefer to live on, like, you know, basically rule in hell than be a slave in heaven.
That's his whole thing.
It's his whole thing. Yeah.
That's his whole identity.
We never realized, though, that he actually had that as presented as an option. I guess that is what he got in this storyline.
It also makes me think something that I learned as a kid growing up with other kids and seeing athletes playing track. One thing that I remember someone bringing up to me is that you can't be the type of kid who always has to be the best, because it doesn't matter how fast you are. If you're running track, you know, you might be the fastest kid in your town. You might be the fastest kid in that district. But like, you know, eventually, like if you go to a state relay or something, you know, eventually, if you're like in the Olympics or something, you know, eventually you're going to find someone who can smoke your ass. And so like you have to always maintain a little bit of
humility. Yeah, I think Khan is like, what if I'm the last one standing? I'm the gold medalist. I'm the guy who smokes everybody else's ass.
But that's his whole thing, is like he was bred to be superior. Right. And the further you get away from the eugenics war on Earth, the less superior you are. You know, further into the future, further out into space, we got these weird psychic aliens. And
you're saying Khan is kind of like a kid, you know, like in your story, attract me. But I think anybody who kind of grew up a little bit on that gifted and talented side, you know, you're like kind of hot shit in elementary school, but then you go to like middle school or high school and you're like, oh, there's a lot of smart kids.
Yeah.
Khan just hit that in the 23rd century.
Yeah. So yeah, it's interesting. Yeah. That this guy, he would truly prefer to rule on City Alpha 5 than serve in the anywhere else in the Star Trek universe, I guess.
Joel in the audience says, Khan is a 35-year-old who ruled at high school football.
Yeah.
It's kind of true.
That tracks. But in this conversation with Del Monde, it is more that interesting stuff I mentioned about, you know, the debate on community responsibility to violent offenders. And I think there's really cool questions they ask. And Ivan being judged, this prisoner being judged, it's very much, you know, kind of like Khan himself being judged. And like when Kirk judged Khan and decided to strand him on this planet, but also the things that Sulu was talking about previously, when Sulu is like, yeah, like if you're unfit to cooperate in society with the rest of us and live peacefully, then there's just no place for you then. And you know, it's
but Khan made a serious attempt at evolving that Ivan didn't. So he had basically evolved past at least probably the place he was in when he took over the Enterprise. You know, if he had had Marla by his side, he'd experienced that kind of somebody he was willing to share power with, essentially, and learn to make concessions and stuff, then maybe, you know, he wouldn't have done that impulsive take over the Enterprise. I think Ursula said he did it on like a not a whim, but
on instinct. He was like running on instinct.
Yeah. And like Ivan's still there, totally 100% instinct. Khan has moved past that, at least to some degree.
Yeah.
But not enough. Not enough.
Yeah, or at least like so he says, depending on who's listening.
Right, but. Right. Yeah, the idea that you could, you know, that's a pretty serious tragedy that you can appear to have evolved only to reveal, nah, I'm still pretty much holding to all my worst instincts. That sucks, man. That sucks.
Let's talk about the ending. I guess like the three big events: Marla's bug bite in the hot tub, followed by the final Khan and Ivan conversation / confrontation, and then Marla's death. But the Marla hot tub scene of Joachim standing guard while Marla enjoys the hot spring bath, and then the ill bite.
Yeah, this is a last moment of peace and comfort for her. I suppose it would have been better if she died on the spot and didn't have to continue talking, you know, to like experience the angst of knowing she was leaving behind Khan and, you know, everything else. But she kind of got at least a little bit of peace at the end, something.
Yeah, I appreciated the audio drama getting me to totally just let my guard down and forget that she was about to die. I was right at the moment where I was like, wait a minute, they're spending a long time just, you know, listening to this chick splash around in the tub. Like, what's the point of the scene? Where's this go? And then, like, I was like, oh, wait.
But I, like, felt like it could have been anything. Like, it could have been, like, oh, Marla or Ursula or something, like, comes to talk to her. Or, like it could have... Like, yeah, something was going to happen, but I didn't assume it was going to be the death. Did you, were you pretty sure, Taylor?
I was pretty sure she was doomed, but I didn't know, like, well, I did not think it was going to be a Seti eel. I thought maybe she was going to drown. Maybe she was going to have some kind of, like, health issue, you know, because the sulfur thing was, like, thing that they hadn't really tested before. But... the first thing I thought whenever it was like, there's eels in here, I was like, oh, so she does count as like an actual Seti eel death. Like whenever
said she did in the Wrath of Khan.
Well, we were also like tossing up the point of like, oh, if someone is like...
somebody lied.
If someone had a Seti eel in their brain and then killed them, did they count as like a Seti eel death?
Right.
If like they were killed by someone.
Or if she had
someone.
Died away from Khan, like, and at the if Ursula had said, like, hey, I'm going to cover for you, go get in the spaceship, I'll tell him the eel got you.
Right.
You know, there's some bodies around here that were scarred by an explosion. He won't know it wasn't you. We talked about that possibility, too. And so there was possibility ways out of that. But I do sort of appreciate that they said that they're like, the movie wasn't lying to you. You know, this did happen.
My second thought in this is... the xenomorph would never do this to Marla.
It would send a facehugger after her, though.
Not when she's pregnant, right?
No, that was the predator who wouldn't kill.
Oh, I'm swapping them. Okay, but yeah, you know, no. So I was like, she'd be safe from the predator then.
Is it?
Yeah, that was in Predator 2.
I was trying to recall if somebody in the comments were talking about whether or not Del Mondo was had, you know, duplicitous, and you know, did she, was it just, you know, random that Marla had that happen? And I think it was, but I'm like, well, what if one of the other Elborians was like, you know, like, hey, we kind of, you know, yes, we're trying to be these uplifted people, but this Ivan dude killed one of our own, so what if we don't mention that, or, you know, that there's, we know that there's eels down there or something like that. Is there any possibility that the Elborians knew that, that's among their secrets? I don't,
because they did think scan it. Remember, like, Del Mondo was like, we scanned it. There's nothing down there. We already knew that there's nothing. In
right.
The
and they haven't given us any particular reason to think that their tech would fail. Yes, they, I mean, it could have been that. I guess they did have a damaged ship. They've mentioned that they've had to scrap, you know, like the best they could do is put together a you know, an escape ship that'll hold four people.
They actually make it sound like in here that the Elborians didn't know what the sea life would be like in the caves. Because Khan tells Del Mondo that, like, our people scouted the Sunless Sea and there's no sea life in it. So.
Yeah, but Del Mondo said that they had scanned it and already knew that.
Yeah, because they were going to do hydroponics labs. They said that they had that and something else that were going to basically allow them to, you can still live off the sea, even though there's no fish in it.
I think, though, Khan is going to blame the Elborians for Marla's
right, he's gonna
death.
Think...
They're going to be like, you said there was nothing in here.
Yeah.
And they're going to be like, well, we didn't scan the hot springs, we just scanned the Sunless Sea, is going to be the argument, I think.
Yeah, they've already illustrated within this episode that he will jump to conclusions as far as, like, Elborian motivations go, so.
But yeah, that's going to be rough. I do wonder if it could just be a technological mishap, like, okay, well, we didn't say because we know how paranoid you guys are, but that our scanners weren't at peak capacity because of the crash. Like, it could have been, it doesn't have to have been the, you know, a deliberate thing. They could have kept that secret just because they knew how much the augments were untrustworthy.
I still don't think it was deliberate, but I might be wrong. Like,
I don't think so either, but.
I like y'all pointing out the possibility, though, because I hadn't considered that either.
Yeah. There's going to be some interesting reveals in the next few episodes. Or next two episodes.
But before we talk about Marla's final moments, I just want to go into that that Khan and Ivan scene. Ivan's failed assassination attempt. But that is when Khan, you know, explains that he is learning to compromise and he has agreed to share leadership with Del Mondo. And, you know, Ivan's just kind of like laughing at that, like, oh, that's so ridiculous. No way you would agree to that. And that's when he offers him the poison cup and that Khan immediately recognizes, and they have a bit of a fight. It sounds like we hear them fight, and yeah, it's
Khan like kind of wins the fight, right? He's like, don't get up or something like that.
Yeah. It's strangely moving because you can tell that, you know, Khan is like won the fight. He's dominating over Ivan and is choosing not to kill him because Ivan is so sad and crying about you know, Marla changed you and these filthy aliens have influenced your mind and all this stuff. He's begging Khan to kill him, and then it's kind of cold-hearted, but when Khan gives us a bit of a villain monologue and he does admit, you know, yeah, basically it's my only option is to have this alliance with Del Mondo, but it's not permanent. I'm still going to have to be true to my nature and true to who I am. You know, he says, I'll wear this alliance, you know, while it serves my purposes, I'll wear it proudly like a cloak, but I still got to be myself underneath. But he spares Ivan here, and he admits that, like, I am doing this. I am sparing you, not because I want to spare you, but because this will show Del Mondo, oh, look how merciful I can be. And he actually refers to this as he's mercilessly sparing Ivan.
That's a great turn of phrase, like merciless mercy, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah, I wonder, like, if would Ivan be like, hey Del Mondo, he's fucking with you, he's not really doing this, this is a trick.
Yeah, I don't even know if that would occur to Ivan as an option to try to form an alliance of convenience
His patterns indicate
with the alien.
one-dimensional thinking.
Yeah, he's not even up to Khan's two-dimensional level
Yeah.
then. But this Ivan is to be banned from the cave sanctuary, so he's just gonna have to live in the wilderness.
Yep, it seems like that's where Khan kind of got his notions about exile. Well, aside from his own life, obviously that's I guess what when he turned it on Kirk. I did think it was I could have done without, Ivan kind of shrieking Khan in the Kirk style. I didn't think it needed it. I'm not sure if it accomplished anything other than to be a little cheese ball. But at the same time, I felt like it was a reasonable reaction from him. Like that he was, in anguish, we know, over this. I guess if anything, like if I want to read anything into why, he had a similar reaction to Kirk's, it's that that's what Khan does to people. He gets them, pissed off to like a next level of degrees.
Well, let's talk about the final moments with Marla. The Elborian doctor, Temaris, tries to treat Marla and even the Elborians with their medical technology, say there's
That's
nothing
right.
they can do. And I like that they thought to, have Khan ask them to use their telekinesis. He's just like, "We'll just use your minds. Like when y'all bent up our weapons, we'll just do that to the Seti Il."
Do
And
that thing you do. Yeah.
But at least like to explain to the listeners that that's not an option.
I appreciated that they did that. There was a lot of sort of thoughtful, sort of slightly novelistic things like that, or Delmonda saying, here's our plan for getting out after we rebuild our ship and what we're exactly going to do. A lot of nice detail. I wonder if Khan like believes Delmonda that they, couldn't save Marla, or is he going to like
Yeah.
look
Oh,
back on
but
this and be like, you lied.
he's so irrationally mad when he's just like, "Oh, use your minds to stop it now, or I'll kill you both. I'll kill you with my bare hands if you can't do this." And it's like his refusal to accept reality sometimes. It's like it's the same thing as like refusing to admit defeat, but he
That was him, the equivalent of in Wrath of Khan when he's like, full impulse power. Damn you! That's he just he, when he gets to that place, he just freaks his shit.
Yeah, he just he can't change course. He's just got to keep leaning in harder and harder to get through.
Which is the writer's doing a good job of, even though this is a very expanded version of his backstory, I felt like he's been true to the Khan we knew, while at the same time they've certainly dangled that growth was possibly within his scope. He could have maybe done it if but for, basically these various setbacks that made him just like he's like, oh, gotta go back into total conqueror fighter mode.
And with Marla's death, I guess I do like it being her choice, with it being like her agency when, she's the one who chooses the baby over herself. But I feel for Khan in that moment when like I get it from his perspective. He's like, I don't want to lose you. I don't want to like do all this stuff without you. He's like I already
I'm
like
sorry, but
love
yeah, the
you. I
kid is a
don't.
hypothetical
Right, that's what I
thing.
was about to say. It's like
He
this,
loves this woman.
like you're here, like you
He
exist,
changed
like
for
we
her,
have
or
this.
tried to
Yeah,
change for her.
it's like what Khan told Ursula and Mado in the last episode. It's like, "Hey, y'all can try again, it's like it doesn't have to be the end of the world. Y'all can try again." But
Yeah, he's like saying what he was telling. Like he's was that like practice what you preach almost a little bit in that sense. Okay, this is where I'm gonna probably go off the rails and I'm gonna lose a lot of people here. But do we want to leave a baby with Khan one without Marla? Like, just like, can you imagine Khan raising a baby by himself? I can't. Like, no. And then I get that like this is written as like this is Marla's choice, but I still it's so hard because it's like, well, someone wrote her to make this choice, right? Like
Sure, that's true.
so like
In the end, there are still writers pulling all these strings.
right. And so it's hard for me still like to not just be like, oh yeah, let's just have Marla be an incubator for this baby. And again, for me that's like hard. I've never been pregnant and I don't plan to be, but like I can't imagine making this choice as Marla. And it's like really hard for me to understand being in this position. So like, I can't say for sure what decision I would make.
I mean, I will say this, it came up on Marla with no preparation.
True.
She was suddenly in this compromised state. Then she knew it was like finding out you're terminally ill and you had 12 hours or 24 hours more of being yourself at best. And I think from that perspective, she's like, I would rather that they save this. She probably would be investing a somewhat almost irrational, desperate hope that the baby would make Khan continue to grow, and that she had kind of, you know, she did have that I think that thing that I. You know, I don't have kids either. So, I understand, you know, that I can understand that sort of intense maternal concept where she's like, no matter what, I'm going to put this kid first. Everything becomes secondary to it, mm-hmm. At least in the moment. I think that's where she was. But I do understand, like, it came up on her fast, like, and out of nowhere. What would they, yeah. By the way, what the other option. Was there truly another option? What was the theoretical thing that could have been done? She could have, they would have lost the baby if they
removed the eel.
If they removed the eel, something about it, like the part of her nervous system or something that would have kept the baby alive, would have let it die. I forget exactly what they said. But there was the possibility that they could have done the flip.
I wasn't clear if there was an option where they could guarantee Marla's survival.
Yeah, I think the options were basically like, Marla, you die and definitely the baby lives, or we try to save both of you, but you'll probably both not live. Like, it's like a 50-50 for y'all to survive, right. But this one's 100% the baby will live. Does that make
right.
sense?
Yeah, and I can see her, you know, like, she's a pretty selfless person for the most part, but it's not like she has no sense of herself since, you know, being someone who wants to live as she is. So, you know, it's a complex scene. I think your feelings are reasonable.
Yeah, the thing that I have a problem with this is it's better because in this she does choose this. But in so many real life cases, like, women don't get the option like to abort if it's going to save their life. And so,
yeah, like in some states it's illegal, like in the state that we're talking in right now.
Right.
Yeah, and so it seems a little, to me, like, these topics are very sensitive.
Messaging?
Women have more reproductive rights on City Alpha 5 than they do in the state of Texas.
Yeah.
That sounds about right.
But, yeah, so that just makes me feel like there was even a whole case not too long ago where a woman who had died was literally kept alive on life support, even though, like, she was physically dead, so that her body could keep raising the baby, even though she had said that she wanted to die. And so, like, it just feels a little bit too close to that situation to have come up in this for me. Like, it was just,
yeah, no, it's fucking gruesome.
And yeah. The fact, like you said, it is true. Like, everything that we like or don't like about this, it all does come from writers. So right. it's fair to ask, is the writer messaging too? You know, that is something worth considering. I've had these thoughts in like 100 other stories I've read, and sometimes it pisses me off.
Yeah.
And sometimes I think, oh, well, this was, you know, I guess at least I'm glad that we know that this was in some way coming from a male and female writing team. Mm-hmm. We don't know what the exact, you know, breakdown was.
Right. And I think one of the things that's hard for me to get behind on these situations is when it's like, oh, well, we know the mother and we know, like, her contributions and we know what her potential future is like, right? Because it's like she's alive and has a history and, like, already serves a role.
Right.
And so it's hard for me to conceptualize losing her in favor of like another mouth to feed and raise and possibly like, it's just, it's like almost in the situation, it just seems like a worst case is to be like, oh, here's a baby that we have to take care of who can't contribute, that's probably going to starve to death in 6 months if we can't feed it. And like, right. Sounds so horrible. Like, these are horrible ethical things like to talk about.
No, it, but it's know? Interesting. Like, I appreciate that it prompts these kind of deeper thoughts. And there is something, though, it's like, but there's also the thing where it's like, well, people aren't always rational.
Yeah.
And you can be irrational in very specific ways, you know? I think the connection between a parent and a kid can easily override a lot of stuff. But that's still like they still had to come up with this, like, we talked about this. There was nothing indicated in Wrath of Khan about Marla ever having been pregnant. Khan just says, I lost my wife, right?
Right.
So they invented that story with this ending in mind, or this ending is where they ended up, so... But let me ask you this, Taylor. Obviously, the story isn't quite done yet, but that plot point probably is, I think, that specific plot point. Did it like put you off of things? You probably can't know really until you get to the end, but
yeah, I'm less excited about the next episode now. That's pretty just much how I feel. Like, I'm just bummed because I really, really like Marla. I feel like we all do, right? And I would have been more comfortable with this being the last episode and be like, oh, well, now we're kind of caught up. But now that I'm like, oh, we have two more episodes and Marla's not in them, like, I'm like, ugh, I don't even know if I care. I mean, I am going to listen to them and I'm sure it will be just as amazing as everything else that's come out. But
if we should find out that Lear is her kid and now, and we have some respect and awareness of Lear, then she's not just a hypothetical now, then she is somebody that we know has lived an interesting life and is pushing back even against bound Starfleet, weaknesses and prejudices against augments. Yeah. And so I feel like that might make things a little bit better, but yeah, that's something we'll kind of have to see.
I think I will need a little bit of like some kind of commentary from Lear, like recognizing the loss of Marla. You know what I mean? And not just being like, oh, I mean, I think they would do this, but you know, like my mom died for me, you know, kind of thing. But like some kind of like, oh, I'm like a continuation of her work or something. Like, I don't know. Like, there's got to be something, I think, at least a callback to be like, Marla is still important and wasn't just an incubator.
Right.
Because I think they that's where my brain job. Is at.
They did such a good job of expanding her character from the person who in the original story was essentially like an interesting but kind of lovesick, infatuated woman in many ways. And they made her like notably more than that. You know, they really expanded on that. And it would kind of suck if it was just like, well, that was who she was right up until she died. And then that was the end of her, with no sense of sort of legacy. But it definitely feels like legacy is going to be hanging over the last two episodes in some way.
I also really liked having Ursula in these scenes as someone who has just lost a kid herself. Mm-hmm. And it being like that role reversal of like Mado just lost her baby.
Yeah.
And now in the other pregnancy on Seti Alpha, like we're losing the mom instead of the baby.
That's so what I was going to say. The execution of the death was really good. Just, I mean, like I love it being, you know, Marla's choice of her having like that line. I am Marla. I have spoken, kind of calling back to previously when Khan dropped the, I am Khan on her. And she said, I am Marla.
Yeah. She was kind of pushing back in that episode a few back where she
was
like,
a couple episodes ago.
Like,
so
kind of like, all right, you're going to like proclaim yourself superior because of who you are. She's like, you know what? I can proclaim it too.
So cool callback to that. And then Ursula, I loved Ursula after just experiencing loss and just being at Mado's bedside through some troubling times. Ursula telling Khan, even though, like, we know Ursula is on the outs with Khan right now in like big ways. Like, she was like ready to have like Ivan kill this guy. But in this moment, she says, hold her hand and talk to her. Don't make her do this alone. And I've never, I've never experienced this with like a human being who is passing away. I like holding them as they die, but I've gone through that with animals and just just thinking of just like this man with his wife and him like in this moment to talk to her as she's fading away, he breaks down and agrees with her favored poet, with Coleridge. And starts, even though like he was complaining about like he didn't like the poem, he starts reciting Kubla Khan.
Right.
It's like the last thing that she hears as she fades away. I felt like the execution of all of that was extremely well done.
I wanted to dive in on that later on. Like I have to like not hear, but rather I read that poem and read that scene. As I recall, was there a suggestion of like the city reflect was something like that was built in honor of somebody, in honor of a woman, or you know, to exalt her in some way. Aside from just being, something that she liked, I felt like it maybe had some bearing on this, you know, the story. You know, so maybe some analogy to it. But I don't know the poem well enough to say off the top of my head.
Yeah, but the whole scene where Khan is saying goodbye to Marla is brutal. That's when I was like sobbing pretty much like from as soon as like they're like, oh, basically you have to choose, I was crying.
Evina Andrews really gave it so much work in this one, I think.
Mm-hmm.
To show how somebody is sort of emotionally strong as Khan, who generally expresses himself through anger. We've seen him express him sometimes through humor, but we've never seen like just anguish. Terror, just the total breaking of him as we have here.
Yeah. This is, I think, like the first time he's actually losing someone he needed and not just like someone that he knew or worked with or fought with, you know? Like, this is like his opposite and his companion, you know? Like, this person has like helped him grow in such a short amount of time. And he's like, I think, a little bit better, like, since knowing Marla. Like, obviously he's gonna get worse, but I don't know, that whole breakdown where he's just like, you can't, like, I can't lose you, and like, you know, I don't know, just the whole reasoning with her before she makes her decision, like, oh man, all of that was just like knife to heart, you know.
Yeah, they could have had this be something that happened kind of quickly. Instead, they sort of expanded it and let it be something that takes several minutes to happen, so that you have to sit with it the same way Khan has to sit with it and feel him break down. You can feel his voice shaking, you know, he is losing it. That's his, you know, Academy Award scene kind of, but amazing work.
One of the advantages of the show we talk about is it being all audio only, and that we have to like imagine it. And I think that kind of like emotional audio that we get from Naveen is like, you're in it. So like you're imagining yourself there. And like, I think it's almost like more powerful, because instead of like witnessing Naveen Andrews and like whoever is playing Marla, but like imagining and Rin seeing Schmidt. Them, you're imagining yourself like as Khan, or you're imagining yourself like as Marla. Like that's how when I'm in the audiobook, like whoever's kind of talking is who I am, like as we're playing through the audiobook.
That's an interesting notion.
You're kind of like feeling it firsthand, I think, more than like if you were witnessing it as like a movie or a TV show.
As a counterpoint, in Deep Space Nine, when Sisko breaks down as the writer in what was the episode?
Beyond the Farthest Stars. Those are the two that always mix
that one.
Up.
It's amazing scene.
Vinny Russell.
It's an amazing scene. Next level acting, but you are, I think, focused on it as this character, and maybe not quite thinking of yourself in the role in the way that an audio play does. And and that's not really to take away anything from DS9. That's an amazing episode. But there's an added element, that sometimes I think may come from something that, you know, in a book, you know, there's the, you know, it takes place in your mindscape. And to some degree, that's also happening in an audio play, just in a different sort of way. It challenges you to be sitting there with it the way Khan is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, any other thoughts on this episode?
Excited to see where this goes. If
yeah, only two as, more.
As I think Joanne and maybe some other people were guessing in the thing, if Mado and Ursula get off, escape on the ship with the child, and maybe Delmonda, if they are the ones who make it out, basically two parents, one child, and Delmonda as pilot, that would be the four, and that would potentially be pretty satisfying. It would be nice to imagine that a family could actually have emerged from this and even had good lives, would take a little bit of the bite out of how otherwise morose it might feel in those last two episodes.
Yeah. Just
nothing but tragedy by seeing how it plays out for, you know, their kid. Maybe not.
Well, if that's all we got, then we can move on to the Gorn Egg section of the show, where I like to point out the Easter eggs and jokes and continuity connections. Don't really have much for this episode other than Dr. Lear mentioning that among the people with augment DNA that are discriminated against, many of them are in Starfleet. So probably talking about people like
Una Chin Riley.
Una Chin Riley and La'an Noonien Singh. Although we don't know the status of either one by that point, by like post Star Trek VI. I think they're probably both dead. They're both going to die in the remaining two seasons of Strange New Worlds.
Jeez. Dark. Knows?
No, I think La'an will, but I think if they're going to do that Star Trek Year One show, they're going to make Rebecca Romijn be Captain Kirk's boss. She's going to be the Admiral April role on that show. I think that's the plan. We'll see if any of that happens, but who knows. But we don't have any time for subspace transmissions, but we talked about this episode for over an hour and a half. You know how the three of us feel about it. Please let us know your thoughts on I Am Marla or any of the Star Trek Con episodes, and we might share them next week when we talk about the penultimate episode. Just want to let people know, and this is important for the people who like to show up and watch live on YouTube, that we're going to do something crazy next week and do the show a couple days early because it's Halloween next Friday, and we want to celebrate with the children in our neighborhood that are going to knock on our door and want some candy. We don't want our house to get egged, so we got to...
What is this, the 1950s?
Yeah, we don't want any tricks, so we got to provide the treats. But we're going to do the show on Wednesday morning at 10 a.m. Central Time. That's going to be Wednesday, October 29th at 10 a.m. Central. So we'll be a little early with next week's con. But then we should be back to normal after that. So, please come back next week for more con talk at a different date and time, but hopefully the same quality of conversation. And after we're done with Star Trek Con, we're going to do those Space Seed and Wrath of Khan shows. We're going to do some backtracking retrospectives to get ready for Starfleet Academy. And then next, we're getting more Star Trek, at least like TV Star Trek next year than we got this year. So we're going to have a season of Academy, a season of Strange New Worlds. Looking forward to all of that. Kind of feels like we have a lot of Star Trek next year after not getting much this year. So, but enjoying Star Trek Con here towards the end of the year. So closing out strong. But come back next week. And until then, as always, live long and prosper, y'all.
Subscribe to YouTube to watch the Text Trek podcast live or listen to us later on your favorite podcast platform. Follow Stephen Fothery on socials at TX Trek. Thank you and take care.